You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Given away there by Kansas City, it's Robert Earnshaw! Robert Earnshaw makes no mistake! And in the third minute, it's his first goal for Toronto FC!
Saturday, March 9th. It's Andre Zadorozny, and I'm Ian Clark, and we are live and direct celebrating a home opener victory at the Football Factory after a 2-1 result over heavily favored Sporting Kansas City. Listener, beware, it's a festive atmosphere with plenty of optimism as a Robert Earnshaw brace and John Bostock display buoy our look back on the game. However, as you've come to expect with East Side Stand Up, we keep it in perspective, breaking down the game, the players on hand, and what to expect next week in Montreal and through the coming months. All in the next 40 minutes on East Side Stand Up. Football Factory, the first game. I thought the perfect way to start this off, Andre, is often I don't like to be wrong. But when it comes to Toronto FC, I don't mind being wrong.
Yes.
Because that usually means I predicted a loss wrong.
That's true.
And we're back from the Dome, of all days.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What a gorgeous day. And on the way to the Dome, we were saying, wouldn't it be nice that if the Dome would be open? Or even we had the first game of BMO, and it was... But it's so unpredictable, Toronto weather, this time of year.
Yeah.
And they didn't have it open because they have all these rules. But still, it would have been nice. Open sky and a big win.
Yeah,
how nice would that have been?
A 2-win victory.
But the win will suffice. That's sunny in my heart.
Yeah, there you go. So we did. Yes, it may not have been sunshine literally in the Dome, but in our hearts,
rays of it. It's like I was on the beach.
Yeah. And so, as everyone I think would know by now, by the time this is a 2-1 victory, and we're celebrating here at the Football Factory.
Yeah.
It's going to get rowdy. Usually we're here and it's empty. Nobody comes in after a Toronto FC game.
Everybody wants to drink a pint on a sunny day and a fairly warm day as well. So
yeah.
Patio weather.
But we wanted to start this off kind of framing the game or setting it up. A flashback almost a year ago.
Almost a year.
A year ago to the day where we'd be walking down Bathurst along front into that dome with, you know, high spirits. Tons of optimism,
and
we walk out of there, although not with a win, but still so much to look ahead to in the season ahead. This year we're walking down, maybe dragging our feet a little bit.
A lot of question marks. I mean, what we were saying about last week was the first game. It's hard to judge a team by one game, right? And it's still a long season. But we said the second game, you know, as each game is a step, because before we were saying Aaron Vinter... There was some type of cohesion that we weren't seeing in the last several years with the team. We thought Aaron Winter was the man, the choice, but we went 0-9. So I mean, who's going to predict that, right? And with Torsten Frings in the lineup, etc., we had a lot of positives. But game two of the... What era is this? I don't even know.
Yeah.
Seventh generation?
Lucky number seven.
Lucky number seven. This is the Premier League... era, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll come into play as we go on.
Oh,
but,
yeah, sure.
But we have a lot of positives to come out of this, and it's baby steps, game by game.
Yeah, I agree. And I wanted to just, going into this game too, you know, we were looking back at last season, but I mean, if we look back on all the season openers, I think it's okay because we will end this, we will go through this podcast with a fair bit of positivity and optimism, at least on this day. But going into the game, there wasn't a lot. We have to be, you know, we got to keep it real. We got to say it as it is. I was looking back, you know, thinking back to every opening game, and I don't think there's ever been a season quite like this one where we've walked into our opener kind of saying, well, if we, you know, we win 5 or 6 games, that's a good one. You know, last year, I think we were building on that Champions League run and in a really strong second half of 2011. At the start of 2011, you know, we were so excited to see 4-3-3 football. 2010, you know, we were sold on, we had an MLS caliber coach that was going to take us to the playoffs. You know,
was the key.
Because we were one game away from the playoffs. All we needed was an MLS caliber coach. And then in 2009, you know, we had Di Rosario coming in. And everything was lining up in place. Like, all our chips were on the playoffs. And this year, it's really been stripped down. And, you know, everything we're hearing about Kevin Payne and Ryan Nelson is that they've walked into a bit of a shit show, and how much work there is ahead of them to get everything where it's got to be. So, you know, we're going into the season with not a lot of expectations.
And yet, as we hit the game, the Sky Dome was alive. There was generally positive spirits.
Buzz.
And you got excited, really excited when the fireworks came out. And there was no really, but it
I
was
think
like
we're gonna win.
There was this positivity, like there's this, because we all are eternally hopeful. That's the problem with TFC. That's the problem with Toronto fans in general. TFC fans, we've had to put up with a lot. I know it's not the Leafs, but still, you know, 7 years into an organization and you're still wondering where your playoffs are. That's a lot to handle. But with that environment today, realizing it's an early home opener to start, number one, I think it's the earliest home opener we've ever had, if I'm not mistaken.
For MLS.
Yes. So, that going in there, getting our football early, all positives. And then, who is the starting 11 today? And the players that were coming on, new players, new faces, who are they?
One new player this week, and I think that's the name we're going to be repeating multiple times in the podcast, of course, is Bostock.
Yeah.
Who came on pretty much the same
standing lineup. And by the way, standing ovation when he came off the pitch.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So we saw a similar lineup to the Vancouver game. Stephen Fry wasn't ready to go, so. And might have been ready to go, but I think Bednik looked good enough in that first game that they don't need to rush Fry.
And he wasn't wearing when he came out to thank everybody or congratulate everybody at the end of the game, he wasn't wearing anything on his face, so I think he's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, it's better to rest him. And you're right, Bostock is playing, not Bostock, rather,
Bednik,
sorry, Bees. He's playing well.
Yeah, yeah. And, the back line's unchanged with Eckersley, OD, Caleb, and Morgan. And then it's the midfield where it's Dunfield, Hall, Ephraim and Lamb, and up top you kind of have Bostock and Earnshaw. But it wasn't, the formation was a little bit different this week, where we saw, you know, Bostock comes in and he looks to be, although he's listed as an attacking midfielder, I mean, he plays wide
right.
Which allows, it looked like it was almost like, you know, you have Earnshaw up top alone, but with a little bit better support from Ephraim and Bostock, a little separation between the midfield, those players, and Lamb, Dunfield and Hall, with Dunfield and Hall particularly kind of holding down that defensive midfielder position, and Lamb sort of having a little bit of room on the left side to kind of transition. You know, he'd come back and he'd move forward, but more guys committed up top, and we saw that pay off out of the gate. And this was a game against a Kansas City team where if you sort of take last week's games as the template going into this one, you know, we know that Toronto's going to come out quick. We saw that last week, but we needed to come out quick and score.
Yeah.
Because we saw Kansas City come out slow against Philadelphia. Philadelphia only got one goal, and it didn't hold up. And KC came on strong in the second half.
Scored three goals.
Yes. Right. So this is what we knew going into this game.
And we all thought that, I mean, this was a dangerous game to begin with. Home opener against a strong, positive organization in Kansas City. I mean, I don't know about you, but I know about me. I had my doubts that we're going to come away with a win. If even a tie.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's what I was saying right at the top. I mean, I predicted a loss, and I don't think that was so far out of the question. You know, one of the things that I'm still gonna bring it up is stability. Stability in the roster, and if we're gonna keep juggling things around, you know, Kansas City has stability in their roster. They're familiar with one another. You know,
they have the confidence to go forward.
Yeah, and they're in sync. So, and Toronto's not yet. So we're gonna be up against this every team we play. But we had the intangible on our side of a home opener. You know, 30,000 fans, 25,000 fans. You know what, we joked for once, they might have actually not been bullshitting.
That's
us
right.
With the attendance of the game.
Exactly.
It was announced at 25,000 and it actually looked like 25,000.
It sounded like 25,000.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's sort of how this game came out, and right off the bat. You know, we see the players from last week being influential, and that's Robert Earnshaw.
That's a good point in terms of we just kind of hinted at it, the 12th man, and that this team, I believe, after watching this game at this moment in time, that this team has more to play for than any other squad in the history of TFC, even the first year. And I'll tell you why, because there is a history now of failure and utter incompetence. So perhaps with this all the new faces coming in the rotation in the bureaucracy upstairs and on the pitch, that we're trying to have, we've been promised a new outlook, but maybe we're finally starting to get it.
Yeah, or you know what? Like, the approach to this team could be reverse psychology, being like, everyone thinks you're losers. Every team thinks they're gonna beat you at home
and walk in here and kick our ass.
And the question is, are you gonna let that happen? And there is the potential there, I think, to really play the mind game with this Toronto FC side and say, like, everyone thinks you guys are losers.
Be the dark horse.
No one predicts you to win a game.
0-9 last season.
What do you have to say to that? And then you also have players who are coming in. I mean, you have players: Earnshaw, Bostock, Ephraim. Even to an extent, Caleb Odean, Eckersley, Betnick, Russell, all these guys, I mean, they're sort of, even Reggie Lamb, I mean, they're on the periphery of being like, are you going to stay on this team or are you going to go? Right. Your players that I inherited, you got to prove yourself to me.
Right.
Because I'm looking to make my team.
Right.
So you got to prove that you're going to be on my squad. This is Ryan Nelson
and
Kevin Payne I'm talking about, right? Every time a new guy comes in, they want their guys. So it's on the existing players to prove twice as bad that they deserve to stay on.
But that's interesting because in every, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to be that in every season that we've had in a new organization or new coach, there's lots of big changes, which hasn't been the case this time. I feel like they're inserting, it's like a game of chess. They're keeping the regulars from last year that worked hard, that stayed with the team, and all these new players they're adding them in as they see fit.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dunfield did say it, like we talked about it last week, is that they're playing for their jobs. And it looks like they're playing for their jobs.
Yeah. So there's something else. There's an added motivation just out of, you know, week-to-week competition for these guys, if we're going to frame it as such. But as you know, as we roll into the game and we set up sort of how Toronto was going to come away with the win, I mean, they did it. And it's funny that, you know, we set up the flashback to the LA game, and it was like the flashback to the LA game, like almost literally on the pitch, like right within the first 5 minutes. And credit to Hogan Ephraim, who I don't think played a great game last week, you know, causes this turnover, puts the pressure on, cheap side pass the defender that Robert Earnshaw cuts in front of,
and
just slots it home.
Yeah.
Slots it home. And I think, if I remember reading correctly, one of his criticisms from playing in England was finishing. It would take him a couple chances to finish. So there's his first chance. He finishes it. We're up 1-0, and we're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
This is like deja vu all over again. Where are we going to hold on? You know, 1-0 is not exactly against Kansas City something to get overly excited about, but it was a great start, and you're feeling good. But with the whole game ahead of you, you got to build on that. And of course, they did.
Yeah.
As this first like third of the game, first half of the game comes on, you know, we see the emergence of Bostock.
Oh yeah, like full flight. I mean, even his presence, he's a big guy. You can see he plays a different type of game.
We noted him right from the start too, we should say.
Okay.
Like even before he, you know, just warming up in the kickoff, I mean, you pointed him out being like, he looks like he's a good player.
Yeah.
But as this half goes on.
Yeah, he's fit, he's agile, he boots, and he put pressure on the defense. And perhaps he's a Tottenham loanee, but as we looked at, did a little research, you see that he hasn't really played any games for Tottenham Hotspur, and he's been through many teams, and I think he just came from Swindon Town, if I'm not mistaken.
Shrewsbury.
So, all lower division teams, but he comes out and he plays like he's got something to prove, and we were talking about a bit of an ego. We don't know him, obviously, but maybe he's got that mentality, like, I can really make a run at these MLS players, or these players that don't have the same training I do, don't come from the same pedigree. And so he goes out there, and you see it immediately. He had, and was it the end of the first half, there was three guys on him, and he kicked it and passed it to Eckersley in the box.
Yep.
Like, that's class that I don't think. And as everybody got up and gave him a standing ovation when he got subbed off in the second half, no one has seen on this team. I went on to say ever. I'm going to put it out there and say ever. Because it's a lot of gritty football in the MLS and a lot of gritty football in Toronto. And that's kind of how Torsten kind of played. He plays very rough kind of type of football. Not graceful, but it's slick.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that in a long time.
And I think we need to... I think now, as we talk,
and he set up. I think he set up that penalty.
He did. He won the penalty. But let's frame Bostock as this in terms of a first impression, because as we've seen year after year, you know, Javier Martinez made a great first impression.
Oh, that's true. You're right. Yeah.
Jorhan Ricketts made a great early impression. Where is he now? I mean, we've seen this before. So I think that this excitement we're feeling, I think we should sort of back it up and just say that. I mean, this is our first impression of Boston.
But where are they coming from? Is my I think training and experience comes from where you're from, not where you're at. You know what I mean? Like a lot, like Martinez, maybe he didn't have the. I mean, I think there was rumblings of him having a conflict with the organization at the time, and he wasn't playing as much as he wanted to. So, you're right. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. But I like to think that someone like Bostock will come out here, and you're right, we have the ability to sign him in 6 months, full on. So, if he enjoys his time here and plays hard, and Ryan Nelson is a person that's played in the Premier League and has a lot of that experience, and maybe they connect.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of common denominators on this squad that weren't when Martinez or anyone else was playing.
Yeah, and I think one thing, too, is you're going to run into the issue also of, like, of contract fees. But a lot of these guys that are coming in England, like, if they're not, if he's not playing for Tottenham, you know, he's playing for Hull City.
Right.
Or Lincoln or whatever. And if you're going to say, listen, man, you can go play in one of these horribly rebuilt, you know, post-war English towns, or you can go play in Toronto.
Yeah. Multicultural, we'll take care of you.
Yeah, you know, it's a bustling metropolis,
yeah.
Almost. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a big North American city. Hey, the fourth biggest city in North America.
There
right
you go.
Now, past Chicago. Take that, Chicago.
Is that right?
Yeah, we just did. There was a whole kerfuffle about it.
Amazing.
Chicago had their nose at a joint. Anyways, so I mean, there is sort of like a little bit of a lure, I think, for some of these guys that come over here and be like, oh, you know, because there are a lot of sort of like industrial towns in England that are just, they're not great places to live, even though there's the football is part of the culture there.
Yep.
In terms of just like social life and day-to-day life, maybe not so attractive.
Yeah.
So, but that's the one thing I wanted to just get in is obviously Bostock in the second goal. He has this confidence about him where he's like, I'm going to take the defenders on 1v1. He works his way into the box, and it's almost like he did the perfect play where he just led it kind of to the corner of the, you know, he didn't go towards goal, it kind of went to the side of goal to almost draw the foul.
Right.
And he does it. I mean, it's funny, you get a text from your brother and he's like, he goes down like a girl.
Huh.
But it's like, hey man, well, I mean,
but that's his job.
We're playing for the win.
And he's draw. And, I think my brother had the more incidents because he did it a second time. He tried to draw a second foul. And it was a little light, but that's.
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's what you're supposed to do, and especially if the referee is giving penalty kicks,
yeah.
and he's proven it.
That was no Suarez foul. I mean, that was he got a foot on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we get into Bostock, draws the foul. Robert Earnshaw comes up, does the massive stutter step.
He's cocky, and he slotted it home.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, if we're talking first impressions, I think I want to throw Robert Earnshaw as well, who's in these two games has made a great first impression. And my first impression of him is he looks like a guy that has come to play. It looks like he's off the bat, you know, maybe we've made a good impression on him too.
Yeah, he likes his position, he likes where he's playing.
And that's something where I think you need a guy at his age, maybe for these younger guys that are coming in on loan in terms of Bostock and Efrain and even Reggie Lamb, where he's got the professional experience, where he's got to say, hey, look, lads, like this is an opportunity you have to take, and we have to nip this in the bud and make it happen. You know, like nothing's going to be gifted to you, and I can tell you right now, in these two games, like we're professional footballers. You can either make the most of this and keep your career on an upward trajectory, or you can end up playing in Israel,
yeah.
Right? Which might not be so attractive right now, other than Canada. Or you can end up playing in some country that's just not where you want to be.
Right.
At 22, 23, 24.
Yeah.
So we get up 2-0. And of course, like I said, it's flashback. And he does the flip. You know,
yeah.
A year ago we're seeing the karate kick on the corner flag. This year we're seeing the flip. And the, I don't know what he was drawing, a line or something like that.
Oh, he was doing the El Matador.
Is that what it was?
He was doing, you know, with the red cape.
Olay.
Olay. There it is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he has really, really good landing, I gotta say. He landed both of them very well.
Yeah, it was clean.
But there it is, and we're up 2-0. And that's, we're ecstatic. All right, it's flash back, slash forward, what, flash sideways to LA again.
Yeah.
And
but that's almost like it's a flashback almost in you know, I'm a little bit of trepidation at that 2-0 lead because I'm again, like, we've already framed this in terms of the stability in the side. The opponent
Toronto's not known to defend very well in tight situations.
Soaking. If Tim Vickery was here, you know, he'd be talking about how we can't soak up pressure and how every time he sees it, it just
and
drives
guess, and,
crazy.
And then what do they do? For the beginning, most of the second half.
Yeah, well, let's get into that. I mean, we finish the first half, we get in the second half. Kansas City substitutes Bobby Convy for CJ Sapong. CJ Sapong, the 2011 Rookie of the Year. So he comes in, so they've added another attacking threat on top. And I think you could almost say for 20 minutes, I think it was almost like the 63rd minute, Toronto had no possession.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. And they said, it's always dangerous business, and I'm not sure. I mean, they had such a great attack. They did the same thing almost last week against Vancouver. And for whatever reason, they sat back in that second half. And I don't get it. To me, I mean, this is just a bias. I just think that the best offense is the best defense. And vice versa. The best defense is the best offense. So you got to go out there and you've got to score goals. Or at least try to score goals. The ball is better in their possession, in their zone, in your possession, than it is in the opposite way. And again, Toronto has a history of really cocking everything up. And again, LA flashbacks. That a few late crosses at the end. I'm thinking Beckham and Donovan again.
Yeah.
You know, it's dangerous business. I mean, we were talking about OD and
Caleb.
OD and Caleb in that center back position, and that's what seems to be working out.
Yeah.
I mean, OD is captain, and he's out there and he's barking orders and he's putting making himself pressure and presence, and they had a good game.
Yeah, and I wish we'd started with that because we were talking about at the beginning of OD with the captain's armband.
You made a Mike Consantos comparison.
Well, where it's just that, you know, the coach comes in and he kind of looks around and he's like, I don't know who to give this to, and I guess OD's looked okay in practice.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been a bit of a turnover, and when you look at on the team, on the starting lineup, I mean, the only other guy you could make an argument for is Terry Dunfield in terms of veteran leadership, and he was on the team last year.
That's right.
I mean, those are the two qualifiers right now for a captain.
So.
And when you look through him, I mean, you got Ernst
and he's
Lamb.
Canadian.
Yeah. So I wouldn't have criticized either choice, but I think maybe when you have a guy like Ryan Nelson, who you know was a center back himself, was a leader, was a captain, I think that's maybe where he's by default is going to look at being
sure.
Like this is where the captain needs to be on the back line.
Right, right, and that's the huge question mark that we're coming into the 2013 season is that back line. With Ryan Nelson being on the bench, as we've talked about it, him being from QPR and Tottenham
and Blackburn
and DC United, and he's a defender, born and raised a defender, and he's good at his trade. I mean, the last few games before he retired from English football or football in general as a player, played really good games that I got to see. So. And he's fit, right? And he's agile. And he's there.
He could be starting for us.
But that's exactly it. He could be. He could easily just take off his nice fancy suit and just go on the pitch. But that's what
his smart sweater.
His smart sweater.
Vest.
But that's, I think that's what he had last week.
Vest.
Yeah, in the New Zealand colors. But he's. I think that's exactly. I agree with you. The OD is the captain because you need a captain on the back line. You need a wall, a strong wall. And we didn't see it so much in that first game, but I think we got to see it the second game.
Well, and that's the thing. I think going into the season, there was a fair bit of criticism for Caleb coming on board and concerns over his age and his fitness that I didn't share with some people. Where I said, you know, at 32, a center back. You want experience more than anything, and positioning can make up for a lot. Experience can make up for a lot as a center back. Sure, if you get caught out, you'll get beat for pace. But Toronto's biggest issue over the last 6 years has been set pieces.
Yeah.
So I mean, pace is not an issue in that circumstance. What is positioning and experience and understanding of where you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to track your teammates. Danny Caleb ticks the box when it comes to that stuff. So I think that was one really positive thing. If we go through the second half, where you know Toronto didn't have a lot of possession, you know they bent, and they didn't break.
Yeah, and that's huge. That's huge, and they clear the ball more, and then near the end, when Kansas City did give up that ridiculous goal, and that goal came out of nowhere, Califf was fighting with the ref,
yep.
and then had to come back, and all next thing you blink, and they've slotted it home.
Yep. Yeah, and that was it. I mean, it was a...
That's dangerous.
It was kind of a brain fart, too. I mean, you saw Morgan didn't look committed to the play, and that the new acquisition by Kansas City, Beeler, came through. Proved that he could finish. That's a big issue. That's been a big issue for them, getting a guy who can consistently score. So, you know, we're down to last 10 minutes, but it was actually 15 minutes.
Yeah, because they added 5 more minutes of extra time, which I'm not really sure where that came from.
It's called the MLS Cup favorites bonus. It's an MLS Cup favorites bonus time that they'll get through this season, a chance for them to pull off the result.
But they pressured. Toronto pressured.
They came back on the other end. And we saw a lot of... We saw all three substitutions used in that final sort of third or 20 minutes of the game. You know, you said it before, Bostock goes off to a standing ovation. We see Russell come in. We see Becker come in. And we saw Osorio come in. Neither of them made a major impact. But, it's fresh legs. And I thought they were good substitutions at the right time to keep that midfield.
And that, yeah.
And that's what
Nelson was trying to do, is set up, have that extra bonus of almost two back lines, keep that stiff midfield to help a tired back line.
Yeah, yeah, and it was good. So we go through this extra 5 minutes, and you know what we should say, Tim, at the end of the game was chippy, and we made note of
the last 20 minutes, there was a few fights.
We made note of Aurelien Collin a couple times in that game.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that's like... You love him on your team, but you fucking hate him when you play against him.
And he's in your face.
Such an asshole through that whole game, you know, just like getting in people's faces and causing trouble and just being a shit.
Yep.
I mean, that's really, but, you know, he's like a Claude Lemieux, right, of soccer, where it's like he's awesome on your team, but you just hate his guts. But again, I mean, we got down the stretch, and we should move. Like, Bednik made a couple nice plays down the stretch. He tipped that one that hit the crossbar. A corner, or I think a free kick swing, then he tipped it wide. He looked good. I mean, again, Toronto's always had a good second keeper.
Sure.
It's almost been right on the heels of the starter. I mean, I don't think you could say, like, if he was our starter, I don't think anyone would be complaining.
No. Well, I mean, not at this game. And when he had to be called into action, he stood up to the plate.
Yeah,
to use a cliche.
And we hold on. We hold on to the 5 minutes, and we get out with a season home opener victory.
Yeah.
I think the last home opener victory was 2011, I think, against Philadelphia, if memory serves. I think Philadelphia, we beat them 2-1 at home. And that was the last one of a few rare home opening victories for Toronto FC. And one thing I wanted to note, actually, that was slide into his little sights and sounds. One of the sights I saw that I thought was quite encouraging, right when that whistle blows, OD and Califf embrace, hug in celebration, and then they go straight to Bednik, and then Morgan comes in, and then Eckersley comes in. So our four defenders and keeper are all together congratulating each other, like on their own.
OD was waving everybody in.
Yeah, the team is over by themselves, like the midfield and the attackers at the bench, whatever, but that defensive group were together, sort of like giving each other ups. And I think that was really positive, because I think that's been a really problem area for the team over the years. And to see that Califf and OD seem to be in sync, you know, they gave each other like a hug and they're ready to go. They pull in Morgan, they pull in Eckersley, and then they bring in Bednik. It's rare to see sort of that cohesion.
It is, you're right. I mean, it looks like they're working outside, I mean, they're working in practice together. And maybe they're really doing a lot of just focusing on that defense. I mean, maybe that first game showed that we have an okay offense. We have a way. We have someone who's hungry for goal, and now with Bostock, we have someone that can kind of really push that forward. But now with that back line, it's always been a problem for years. So this is the time to focus. And as we said, a coach who could also be a defensive coach, right? And I'm sure he's giving him everything that he's been imparted from Harry Redknapp. Or from any other coach that I mean, he got Harry Redknapp twice, so.
Yeah.
But from other coaches, other defensive coaches, and whoever else in his history.
Yeah. So as we roll out of it, I think one last thing to kind of say. I mean, we've already sort of framed it and set it up again, but, you know, how do we take this win? How do we put this in perspective? You know, obviously, we're quite jovial. We're very optimistic. We're buoyed by this win. You know, the feeling I had at the end of the game was just, utter relief. I felt, you know, it was nice to walk out of there feeling so good. I'm so happy that we won. And without maybe bringing it down, putting in perspective the result and what this win means. And I, you know, I had a text with Rick as we started. I said, you know what, this season I think is like, we're going to take them when we get them.
Uh-huh.
And let's not get to, you know, I'm sure there's people out there being like, you know, there was a lot of, the second half wasn't good. And there are, you know, we can find things to criticize, but.
A win's a win.
And, you know, I mean, I think these might be few and far between. So in terms of this podcast, and in terms of this conversation.
Do you really think that this season's still a write-off?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. I would be surprised. But you know what I mean? Like, hey, like I said at the start, I'm more than happy to be wrong. I'm more than happy to be wrong. You know, and it's like I'm not trying to set it up that way, but I just, like, I'm trying to be realistic.
I understand.
Right? And I feel like the MO for this podcast, as I've said before, and Tim Vickery has set it up, he's like, let's keep it real. I mean, this is a lineup in flux. We won our home opener. You're supposed to win your home opener.
Right.
Now let's see what happens when Earnshaw, Bostock, Ephraim have to get in a plane and fly to the West Coast and have to deal with jet lag that they've never felt before in their careers.
Right.
And then they have to fly to Chicago. And then they have to fly to Vancouver. And they go on these, like, West Coast road swings. And then they have to come home and play in the middle of July in a 35-degree, you know, afternoon
right.
game.
And then they got to go to Mexico, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah. And then they have these extra games that they've never played yet in Central America. So let's, before we...
That's true.
You know, I want to be happy for the win and talk about the win, but in the greater picture, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. And just keep it real. But it's like, at the same time, let's be happy that we won this game and let's sort of, like, celebrate it in that way.
And this is a great... We're now buoyed by this win in a big stadium with 25,000 people, and guess where we're going to next week?
Yeah, perfect segue.
This is beautiful because now we have 5,000 strong coming to the Olympico.
The Olympico. Hey, you know what? It is an Italian.
I don't know.
Ownership,
yeah, it is. Might as well be the Olympico. The Olympic Stadium in Montreal. But I'm sure Montreal fans would be happy if I said Olympico.
Yeah.
But that being said, 25,000, 30,000 sold for this game so far in Montreal. 5,000, maybe 6,000 I've heard coming from Toronto to this game. We have our own section. Like, come on. A lot of good coming up for next week. And again, baby steps, each game at a time.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, there's... We now have something to kind of hold on to and say, hey, we're good out of the gate. You know, it's funny, I just thought that. Three dome games in a row, that's what we're having. Built for the dome, this team is. But, you know, we know what, we kind of have a little bit of what to expect, is that now we're like, hey, we know Earnshaw is going to be deadly out of the gate. We know that Bostock has lots of potential. We know that Ephraim, you know, he's teetering on there, but he's got a little bit of potential. And we know that we have a center back pairing who looks to be cohesive. We have a defensive line that looks like they're in sync and that, for the most part, looks fairly solid. You know, you can say defensive questions about perhaps Eckersley and Morgan, but, you know, they're two guys that, you know, when they play good, they play good. Sometimes they play bad. It's just a matter of consistency. I thought Eckersley played quite good today.
I agree.
I thought Morgan, luckily, played a good game. Like, defensively, he didn't get burned.
Morgan and Lamb both were the same old for me.
Mm.
Nothing bad, but nothing great.
Yeah. But if we had to go with a man of the match, this is a segment we haven't done for a long time, I don't think you can really debate. I mean, the Budweiser man of the match. There's no Carlsberg man of the match anymore. It's Budweiser.
One liquid beer to the next.
Yeah, I was going to say, we went from the... What's the Carlsberg's the... You're in your Carlsberg years, right? Like, that's
year right, when you're... No teeth.
Yeah, and now we're into...
The Budweiser Youth Brigade. Bud Lime.
Yeah, hey, Budweiser umbrellas out front of the football factory.
Oh, gee, maybe...
So to speak. A plug for Budweiser and a plug for the football factory. Neither of which sponsor the podcast or the website.
And they don't... Well, Budweiser sure doesn't need any of our help.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I should have said that. I should bleep it out.
You should bleep.
I forgot my train of thought there. But I was going to say that I wanted to segue into... to sights and sounds. The one last thing I think before we go out of this game is that you know, going at the dome, seeing the crowd, and it's like a turnover too of fans. I think you find that in the stadium, that a lot of fans have come and gone.
Yeah.
Over the years, and
I'm impressed that they got that many today.
Yeah, but I still got to say, this is our house.
It's the worst chant.
Gotta get retired.
Well, I'm gonna go out there and say that a lot of our chants are really bad. there's not enough singing, there's not enough real singing, like choruses. I mean, I even said we should do Kansas's Carry On My Wayward Son. I mean, at least there's a resonance in these things. I'm not saying it's going to happen, obviously, but there's got to be something that we can latch on to with The Littlest Hobo. Remember there was that song, The Littlest Hobo?
Yeah.
It's great. It's a Canadian iconic TV show, and it had a great song. I mean, yeah, this is our house.
TFC.
I'm over it.
TFC.
7 years of the same chance. Where are the brain trusts in these organizers, in these groups?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't want to
be
too deep into it. where we sit in 105, there was some really good, at one point, before they all got thrown out, you know, there was some really good supporters who had lots of good chants and they were coming up with different songs.
That's
but
true.
They didn't want that outside of the South End. They didn't want that kind of support.
We can talk about these ridiculous rules that, I mean, the organization. I mean, but it's essentially true. They wanted to control every section. This is, well, you can't do this, because rather than have a buoyant universal carnival atmosphere, which was what Fortress BMO had at one point.
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, I think that was one of the I'm not going to go into it, but one of the reasons is that MLSC has all its problems because they try to control a lot of different things about the naturalness of what was really golden about that time.
I think the thing is too is, I mean, they didn't have a clue about running a football team, so they easily influenced. They were easily influenced by someone from Europe in terms of security who tried to tell them that this is a hooliganism that's going to be going on with your club. So you need to stamp this out.
It's a gateway drug to hooliganism.
Yeah, so
they
bought into that and believed that they should be throwing out these fans. There's a little side segue or a side note there of what we're going at. Because my point is that there could have been great chants and there could have been great songs, and yet we're stuck with This Is Our House and TFC.
Which is the Jays' house today.
I mean, yeah, that was the other thing that was a little obnoxious. I'm surprised no one tried to start the wave.
I know.
Which is another thing that really gets my goat. And even, hey, Michael Faulkner next to us, there's a little plug for him, came up with changing Ole 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 to Ode Ode Ode.
That is brilliant.
And I'm like, this guy's had about six pints, and he came up with that.
That's
and I gave
right.
him a lot of credit.
Really nice guy.
I know it's OD.
He's awesome.
But hey.
No, it's cool.
Seriously, who cares?
Yeah.
It works.
Exactly.
You know? He has a good game, and you know, actually, OD, or Ode Ode Ode, had a good game. He deserved the chin. He deserved the chance.
Did we? Oh, that's what we didn't say. Man of the match. Budweiser man of the match.
Oh, we didn't even...
No, we think. So let's go. Budweiser man of the match.
You have to give to Earnshaw.
Really?
He scored 2 goals.
I know he scored 2 goals.
You're going with Bostock?
I'm going with Bostock. I have to. And it's not because
I'm...
No, but that's...
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. He hasn't played any games for Tottenham.
Where's your brother?
He's probably cursing and spitting my name. But Bostock, he's... But the way he played... The way he played, he could have been anybody. He could have been playing from who knows from where, from Sydney FC, you know, with Del Piero. What I am saying is that he changed a lot of that forward push to get Earnshaw into those positions.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, man of the match for me is Bostock.
Well, he's not mine, but I'll give you that point. I think is valid in that the way this club is set up right now, it's like any team that looks at us says, it's the only thing we have to worry about is Earnshaw. Now they have something else to worry about. I always, and even Michael Faulkner gave me a bit of the, gave me the gears for going with the boxing reference, but it's
no, but it's right.
It's what I put from, hey, if you got to go to the body to drop the hands to go to the head. And that's what you need. You need threats outside of Robert Earnshaw in order for Earnshaw to score goals.
Because he's easily covered. He's playing that lone striker a bit too much.
Exactly.
And then if you destroy your midfield, then no, he's not going to get any balls, and that's
so
it.
So you need someone to kind of like pull them away and realize, oh, we got to worry about this guy. This guy's willing to take us on 1v1 and carry the ball into the box. He can draw a penalty. Things like that. You know, and now what we need to see too is guys like Reggie Lamb had a great chance and couldn't convert. You know, the word is that this is a guy that needs to watch out. He needs to start stepping up. I mean, he had a chance, a great chance, to score a goal, and he bounced it over the net.
Yeah, it was a bad bounce, to be fair. But, yeah, I mean, those opportunities, like, for someone like him, he's still, you know, I can see him sitting on the bench if he still has...
If they try to bring in other guys.
Yeah.
They're talking about the two Hondurans.
Right.
We're talking about a second striker.
Argentinian.
Yeah, that it's like, he could be a casualty.
So he needs to put those away.
Yeah, and you know what I even would say, because last week I had critical, Jeremy Hall I thought played a better game this week.
He did.
And it's almost like games like that where, you know, he didn't stand out, but sometimes not standing out is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you're not standing out in the wrong way.
Mm.
And he didn't. Last week there was some bad turnovers. This week he was a little more composed, and he was willing to sort of nail down that defensive midfielder role. So I wanted to mention him because usually he's a target of ire, a target of criticism on this podcast, and I thought he played pretty good. So looking ahead, of course, we already mentioned we have Montreal next weekend, which is going to be exciting. I should note that we're trying to, hopefully we'll get it sorted out. We're going to do a joint podcast with the guys in Montreal that do the 514 FC nice. Podcast. That would be really cool to do one with them. And the other thing, you know, just to do a little admin, a little housekeeping in terms of the podcast. You know, we say it every year. You know, you can reach out to us on Twitter. You know the hashtag. It's either at Red Nation Online or Clark RNO, hashtag ESSU. We're available on email. And the other thing I wanted to plug, too, was that we've on iTunes, man. We need more stars. We need more people giving us props on iTunes because that boosts our ratings on it. We only have two people who have done it.
Really?
Yeah, only two people. Stovillian and, he's going to get mad at me. Yagbod. Chris Schuler, I think his name is. Those are the two guys that have given us great ratings on it. We need more of that because it boosts your ratings on iTunes and it gives the podcast more profile so that we can get sponsorships from Budweiser.
There it is. See? What comes around goes around.
Exactly. Well,
what about the magazine?
Oh, right. And we did the digital magazine. And I thought... I think it's funny. I don't know if other people... I think people might think it's stupid, but I mean, obviously it's a Canadian soccer magazine, so we called it Boot.
It's very witty.
Yeah, you
know,
it's
very witty.
That guy, Bobby Rucci, laughed at that when I was on a soccer show this week. We did the MLSL preview, so if you haven't seen that yet, you know, Armin Badakian, Kevin Duarte, Matthew Lowe, three guys in Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal... I mean, those guys are our cornerstone in terms of coverage. They're great writers. So they did their previews of each of those teams. It's still valid now. Check out the previews. Check out the lineups. And then we'll be doing another one for the Gold Cup. So, I mean, that's alive and well, and everything's really
lots
good.
Lots going on in Red Nation. Red Nation Online.
Yeah, so I think we'll finish it with that. You know, we're going to be back next weekend, however you cut it, whether 514 FC comes on board or it's just me and Steve Botcher, or even Andre and your brother. Are you guys going to be
there? We'll
be
there.
We can do a podcast after the game. We're on the road. It's going to be
awesome. It's
going
to be awesome.
It's going to be a cool experience. So
I'm stoked.
I think we'll finish that. Andre's on the south side.
That's me.
He needs to get on Twitter.
I will. But my Twitter's been crashing on my iPhone. I don't know. But I'll do it. I'll say no for next week. I'll do it.
Yeah, you know what? We apologize for the noise level. But hey, I think it's worth it for a win.
I agree.
It's worth it for a win,
I agree.
Right? And
Spark is on the north.
Spark on the north at Clark RNO on Twitter. And reach out to us anytime, any questions. Was Bostock your man of the match or was it Robert Earnshaw? Let us know.
Yeah.
What you thought about
it. I really want to see what people say about Bostock and Earnshaw. They both played really good games.
Yeah. So signing off. We'll catch you next weekend.
That's right.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
Eastside Stand Up is the only Toronto Sea specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to be involved. Reach out to us on Twitter through hashtag ESSU or at Red Nation Online. You can email us at haveyoursay@rednationonline or info@rednationonline. Get into the discussion on Toronto FC through Eastside Stand Up and Red Nation Online. Understand him, he'll understand you, for you are him.